and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzewski. We're glad you're with us this week. In studio with me is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We appreciate you joining us on the program today. And if you've got a question for Mayor Rozworski during our next half hour, you can call that in to 765-496-1999. You can email questions to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. Good to see you as always.
Hey, Stan, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Let's get right to a couple of questions that have come in from some of our listeners. We had a question we didn't get to last month from Sunny, and I wanted to make sure we got to that first of all. And Sunny writes in asking about public art. Sonny writes, I hope you can tell me there were no harmful brain damage known to cause cancer or keep away from children warnings on spray paints used for past murals painted during the city during your time in office. And Sonny wants to know, does the city check these sorts of things when approving art projects? Do you check for the sorts of materials that are used in these, not just the content of what might be in the mural?
Well, I think I spoke to Sunny. I think she spoke with me also, and I spent a little bit of time discussing that. I mean, certainly, we buy standard products that people could buy off the shelf at hardware stores and different things like that that go through all the rigorous testing that products that we all use daily, whether it's things from paint or food products or other products that we use. And so I'm confident that the paint and the material that we're using is safe for people. We've never had a problem with it. We have a lot of artists that are involved that do a lot of painting, that do outdoor work, that do other type of art features. And so I feel very confident that through our staff and through the artists that we're using and working with the Tippecanoe Arts Federation and the Arts Museum and all the different people that we work with, that we're using products that are safe for the artist and are safe for people that'll view those in the alley. So I certainly understand her concern, and that's something that we would be very concerned about also and try to be aware of. But I'm confident that everything we're using is safe, and we haven't had any problems.
It's an interesting idea, because you could ask also about, for instance, the materials that are used in road projects or building projects. How does the city monitor not just that the work is getting done well, but that whatever you put out a bid on is being done safely with respect to the actual materiel that goes in?
Well, most projects like that have standards that are either through the EPA or the Indiana Department of Environmental Management or through NDOT when it comes to like asphalt and concrete for the different projects that we might do from streets to sidewalks to curb and guttering. There's state building codes when it comes to what types of wire and plumbing you can use when we're doing buildings or we're upgrading like the long center. So there's all kinds of state building codes. So that's actually a very regulated industry. It's a very regulated process that we have to go through. If you look at the documents, by the time we're done, you would see many of those things in there. So again, I'm confident that we're following all the rules and regulations that are established by the federal government, state government, local level, EPA, that we need to. Certainly, can there be things out in the environment that aren't good for people? That we know that there are. But when you look at the regulations that government actually has to follow when they do their projects, whether it's how we go through the public bidding process, whether it's how we have to document wages, the things that we have to turn in, like we said, NDOT, EPA, IDAM, all of those things, we have monitoring checks. I feel pretty good about the processes that we use. We've talked a little bit on your show before, even about the water quality in the Wabash River, and we're doing a series right now on water quality. We're cleaning up the Wabash River by removing the combined sewer overflows that we have throughout the community, upgrading our plant, the tunnel underneath downtown. We're getting ready to start another project on Brown Street and some underground storage tanks. And so from an environmental standpoint, I think the city of Lafayette, West Lafayette, really all of Tippecanoe County is very environmentally friendly. We have that Region 4 MS4 permit that we all do together that helps us with our stormwater. We created the stormwater park out at Jefferson High School, which is another green infrastructure. We look at rain gardens, bioswales, all of those things, rain barrels, pervious pavement, pervious gutter line, planting of trees to help with stormwater and to clean the air. I think overall, when you look at, like I said, Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, when you look at the work that's being done that does help protect the environment, that shows we're environmentally conscious. I think overall we do a really good job.
We've had a very timely question come in by phone from Kevin, who wants to know about smoothing out railroad crossings near the intersections of 52 and 26 by the post office there. And that, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the same stretch that you guys have closed or are closing a stretch of Kossuth slash Farabee there to have that intersection or that crossing, which you and I have talked about on this program, upgraded as well. So what to Kevin's question, and then talk a little bit about the closure that's happening as well.
Sure. Yeah, the big railroad crossing there on 26, we're going to totally rebuild that once we get ready to do phase three of Sagamore Parkway. That railroad crossing will be totally rebuilt. We're going to upgrade that and do a lot of different things there because it is so heavily used. We're also looking at rebuilding the railroad crossing there on South Street down past Steak and Shake right before you get to Earl Avenue and then out on Farabee, as you and I have discussed. The railroad has come in and said at this point, even though they know we're looking at that, that those, a couple of those, the one on Farabee, are in really, really bad shape, and people are hitting their tires on it and different things like that. So they're going to come in and do some repairs that the railroad's actually doing. Now, it's not going to be a full-scale upgrade of the crossing, but they are going to put some new railroad ties on. They're going to smooth it out. They're going to make it better, which should last plenty up into the time that we totally rebuild some of those when we actually widen the road and do some things to make them a lot safer. They're also going to work on some of the other spur line crossings through town, like down by Beach Drive, down by O'Farrell. This has kind of fallen into their maintenance schedule time, and so even though we're looking at doing some significant upgrades to those in the next couple years, they're going to go ahead and do that maintenance. We've had that discussion with them, and I think it's good because some of those really are bad. They're not putting a lot of money into it, just crossing and some other materials, some timbers. So you'll see those get improved. That'll buy us some of the time we need till we do the big upgrades. And so overall, a little slightly inconvenient, but it's very positive for the community.
Thanks, Kevin, for your question. And if you'd like to join Kevin in asking a question of Mayor Rozworski today, you can call in at 496-1999 and do that. You can email ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to talk about something else that came in from a listener, and it's in that same general area. We got to hearing about the fact that there were the owners of a Greek restaurant near the intersection of South Street and Earl Avenue. They're handing their business off to somebody else. This is an area where you and I have talked about the possible widening of the road. We've had callers call in and say, hey, look, during rush hour, there are traffics backing up when you've got people turning off of 52 onto South Street there. I wanted to know if you had a chance to talk with the owners of the restaurant about right-of-way issues in that neck of the woods as they were deciding what to do with their business.
We actually had spoke with the owner for probably almost the last year and a half trying to negotiate an agreement where we needed to purchase the building and actually tear it down and to really do what we wanted to do there. And, you know, we do have rules that we have to follow for appraisals. We can't just pay folks whatever they want. We have to have two appraisals, look at the average of those two appraisals. We can pay some relocation costs that can up that for somebody, but there are parameters that we have to work in to meet state and federal guidelines. And unfortunately, we just weren't able, after months and months of negotiations and talking, we just weren't able to reach an agreement on a price that the gentleman that owned that was comfortable with. And so it's my understanding that he has sold the business side of it, but is actually retaining ownership of the building itself. And I don't know 100% that that's correct, but that's what it's been told. So, yeah, as you said, Stan, that was a building, a couple buildings there we were really hoping to get. We were just going to tear those down to do some additional widening. Obviously, we've got some right-of-way further up that we can use, and we can make the intersection there wider. We can improve it from what it is now. Are we going to be able to get it exactly like we had hoped to? The answer to that's no, and we won't be able to put the piece of trail down there. We were hoping to make a trail connection right there, too. If you know, that building is right up against the edge of the road.
I was just going to say, anybody who's walked by it notices that it's right there.
Yeah, so, you know, we needed to buy the whole thing, the business building, and just tear them down to make the design work. And unfortunately, like I said, we weren't able to reach that agreement. But that's, you know, that's just part of the process. you know, could we have filed for eminent domain and tried to go to court and take away somebody's business and their building? And I mean, that would have been an option, but it's just not an option I was comfortable with. I mean, that building, that business has been there a long time. I believe in certain circumstances, it's just so critical. Sometimes you might not have a choice, but that's something I would only do as a really, really last resort. And so we're going to make it work. We're going to tweak the design a little bit. We'll change things around. We'll make it as good as we humanly can. And, you know, things change someday in the future. You never know. We still may be able to acquire that sometime. And if we do, fortunately, with roads and infrastructure, most of the time you can go back and straighten it out and make it work for you. So we'll get it done now, and we'll keep looking at it in the future.
What does that do to your timeline on that project?
Nothing. We were going down the road kind of looking at two different designs, knowing that we might get it, that we might not. So it's not going to slow us down.
So it's just a plan B sort of situation.
Right, yeah, it's not going to slow us down at all.
And so do you have agreements with the folks who are on the other side of the road to help you out in that way?
We have most of the agreements in place that we need along the whole stretch there of Phase 3. That piece there was by far one of the most critical pieces that we had left. But we have most of the property that we need, or we're in negotiations with this. We're not anticipating any huge problems getting through that. That's always a lengthy process. I mean, most folks probably don't realize that a lot of time on road projects, one of the things that take the longest to get it going, and it seems like it's taken forever, actually is property acquisition, getting the right-of-ways that you need for the roads and the utilities and the sidewalks and the trails. And then sometimes a lot of the businesses and the surveys are quite old and things have changed and maybe not been updated. So there's a lot of additional survey work that needs to be done to make sure that we get this just right going forward. But, you know, we've opened up the northern section of Sagamore Parkway. We're getting a lot of positive comments on that. The southern section, we've got one half of it done, and we flipped over to the other half. We're right on schedule for the first part of 2017 to build what would be the final, that Phase 3 section. So in the first quarter of 2017, we should be bidding that, and we're right on schedule from what we told people several years ago on how this project would look.
All right. Well, we got another question that's come in from a listener who actually asks not to be identified. And this person says, I saw a fire truck in West Lafayette with an American flag and the words God Bless America. And this person wants to know, does Lafayette have the same thing on some of its fire trucks? Because they say, as a taxpayer, I don't think I should be footing the bill for that sort of writing, perhaps that religious message on a public vehicle. So the first question basically is, does Lafayette have any sort of iconography like that on any of its vehicles, fire trucks, police cars, anything like that?
Well, we do have some American flags on some of the fire trucks and on some of the police cars. I don't believe that we have any additional writing on any of the trucks. I don't want to say 100% because we do have one of the trucks that has might have a reference to 9/11 on there. So I don't want to say for sure, but we do have some American flags, and I think that's you know, very appropriate. I respect that individual's comment and their right to believe that. That's not my personal belief. I don't believe that putting God Bless America hurts anything at all, and that's not something that I would personally be uncomfortable with, but I understand their thoughts. But off the top of my head, we do have some American flags, but I don't think we have any other writing.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today on Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. We're glad you're with us. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. You can call in questions for this show at 765-496-1999. Email those questions to ask@WBAA.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, some breaking news from this morning. As expected, the Tippecanoe County Election Board has chosen to enter into a contract with Votech, the company that they had a contract with before there was a kerfuffle about all the companies that provide election software having to be certified by the state. And I wanted to ask you, as somebody who stands for election from time to time, based on the problems that the county has seen with voting in the last couple of elections, whether it's long lines at the polls, whether it's people getting the wrong ballots, what do you think that Votech needs to commit to accomplishing to make voting run more smoothly at the 20 vote centers we have in the county?
Well, I think, Stan, you said it very well there when you highlighted some of the issues that's that have been in the past at elections. I think that, you know, we all know that voting is one of our most important fundamental rights. And we all know that the number of people that vote has continued to decline on average, and that it's incredibly important that we make voting, whether it's the poll books working correctly, whether it's the machines working correctly, whether it's counting the votes at the end of the night in a timely manner and that we know is correct. It's very important that we make that as easy and as accurate for people to vote as possible. If we want to continue to encourage people to vote and say, you know, it's important that you vote, you need to exercise that right, we do have to make sure that the people that are holding the elections and responsible for their smooth operation, that that does happen for people. And so I'm very hopeful that this new company will come in here and that we will see things go smoother. I mean, that's just, that's reality. We have had, there have been some glitches, and, you know, it's, I know the county works very hard on them and the clerk's office worked very hard on them, but the bottom line, and Krista has said that herself, there has been some glitches and they need to get worked out, and we need to ensure that people in Tippecanoe County have confidence in the voting system, that they know they're going to get there and it's going to be easy, and that the line is going to move at an appropriate pace. I mean, nobody can guarantee there'll never be a line at a polling place, and there's no problem with waiting in line for a reasonable period of time to exercise your right to vote. That's certainly probably more important than a lot of things we wait in line for, maybe even longer. So, but people do need to know that it's accurate, that it's going to be done properly and going to be done in a timely manner. So I'm hopeful that this new company will be able to make those changes to ensure that that happens.
Do you get the feeling there has been some loss of confidence among the electorate in terms of the way that voting is conducted?
Well, I that would be hard to gauge. I'd have to speculate on that. But I can tell you just from being out in the community a lot, people do wonder why, in particular on election night, it takes so long to get the results sometimes, or there always seems to be some kind of glitches with the card, or there's just something that's not right. And they hear, as the media should, covers the story about people, you know, not being able to vote or getting the wrong ballot and different things like that. And I think any time that you hear those things, it's caused, you know, for a moment of pause, right? People pause and think, and I think it does create some sense of, well, I hope everything's going okay. I don't think it's enough to drive large numbers of people away from voting, but I do think we have to ensure going forward that we make it as easy as possible and that people do have that confidence if we as elected officials and others want to continue to tell people how important it is for them to get out and vote.
On to some other business. There was an interesting meeting a couple of days ago talking a little bit about the Riverwalk promenade that you're building there along the river right near where the old National headquarters is going to be, next to the train station there. And I know there are some things that are still being worked out about this. I just had a couple of general questions that were interesting. I noticed that, you know, some of the subcontractors will do things like railing work. And I saw the word railings, and I remembered our conversations about all of the railing stuff that happened with Myers Bridge. And I thought to ask you, what did you learn from that project and from it taking longer than you wanted that the city is going to apply to how this project gets done?
Well, certainly, you know, when you look at Myers Bridge and when you're building bridges and you're building structures like that, there's always some unique challenges that you run across. But those obviously were pretty significant and kept the bridge closed for a lot longer than any of us would have liked it have been. And then, of course, with the elevator issues, which, again, you know, it's a challenging spot with the railroad tracks right there and so many trains a day that go through there and vibrate everything. But I think, you know, with life and with projects like that, you always learn things with each things that you do, you know, how to maybe ask more questions, maybe work with the engineers and the consultants a little bit as they do additional research on who those providers are and who those subcontractors will be, and to make sure that, you know, we understand what the timing might be for delivery dates and fabrication dates. You know, part of the issue right now for a lot of projects are, and it, you know, it's a good problem to have, there are so many projects going on. Construction companies and fabricators are very busy. There's a lot of demands. And so timing on when you order specific pieces, when you have specific parts fabricated, is important. And, you know, some folks might say, well, just order it all at once and have it set in some way. Well, that's not good either. You need to order in a way that those products, that inventory arrives about the time that you needed to do it. Storing things for long periods of time is not good. So there's a lot to the logistic piece of it, of the planning. And I think, you know, with all our projects, we look at that very closely. But when it comes to some specialized projects, like railing fabrication and different things that will have to be built, and there will be some unique things on the promenade, you know, that's a piece of that that we'll have to watch very closely on how we work out that timing with our suppliers.
We've been talking a lot about the State Street project in West Lafayette as this public-private partnership. And it seems like this project in Lafayette is sort of similar because you've got the city working on it, you've got the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation, you've got the Dalen Group. And so you've got kind of a public entity, a quasi-public entity, and a private entity all working together. How do you make sure that all three of those get what they want out of this? How do you make sure that everybody's happy at the end of the day and that, you know, the right hand kind of knows what the left hand is doing and you're having enough collaboration?
Well, that just takes a lot of meetings and a lot of communications, you know, and people committed on that project from the beginning when we worked with the Dalen Group to make sure that we were able to do that because it's such a significant piece of downtown, right? That's a great investment for our community, having the regional headquarters of Old National Bank in there and then having those luxury units and some commercial space on the first floor and the way that will tie in to Reedley Plaza and the long-term plans for the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation. You know, that's really a significant investment that really will help change the face of downtown. And so it just takes a lot of meetings with our engineering department, our economic development staff, marketing and communications. It just takes everybody coming to the table and working together. And there will still be a few hiccups. I mean, things happen in construction when you dig, when you go down into the earth that far, when you begin to build. But we're all committed here to working together to get that done in a timely manner that really lets that have all of its potential to be such an important project for downtown. And so far, it's running very smoothly.
Another question from a listener who identifies only as DL, and DL writes, just down the road at Rural King on Teal, there are dozens and dozens of baby chicks for sale, yet Lafayette is not zoned for hen keeping. Can we get an ordinance for up to 6 hens, no roosters, this person says, like other progressive local food-oriented cities?
Well, you know, that's been brought to us before, and there's been some discussion about that. It's never...
I'll tell you what, if in Indiana you want to get a meeting up in arms, bring up urban chickens.
Yeah.
This has been the thing over the last 5 years.
It's never got much traction with the city council. I have mixed emotions about it. We've had a few people approach us about it, but not huge numbers of people. We've done a lot of research on it. There are pros and cons both ways. So, you know, I guess for your caller to, you know, if that's something they're interested in, they can always ask us about it again. We can continue to evaluate that. Most of the time, we have more people that are against that than for it when we begin to put it out into the community. And so, like I said, it's just never got a lot of traction here. I wouldn't say my mind is totally close to it because I don't do that, but it's just not something that's ever got a lot of traction with our council. And typically when it gets brought up, there are more people in the neighborhoods that oppose it than are for it.
On to other things in just our last couple of minutes. I've been making some calls to the company that owns the Lafayette Aviators, trying to find out about sort of like profit and loss and how many hot dogs they sold and perhaps most appropriately, how many beers they sold, since there was so much talk about alcohol being a key to being profitable. Have you heard at all from them on how they did? They've been kind of cagey in getting back to me.
You know, I don't have access to their financial records, and they haven't mentioned to me dollar figures. I know from talking to ASA and some of the other staff that's here, you know, overall they were very pleased with the season. They were very pleased with the support from the city and the parks and the community as a whole. I think at the last game, you know, they announced there was right at 24,000 people that attended games for the season. I think their average attendance was about where they hoped it would be. You know, it was very positive for the community, got a lot of positive feedback from people that went to the games that really enjoyed it. The last night I was there, talked to several people. It was the first game that they had been to. And they said, you know, Mayor, we should have came to a lot more. This was really fun. It was affordable. The food was good. They had a couple beers, you know, and it worked out. And so I think for the first season and having to put it together rather quickly, I think it went great. And I'm very pleased with it.
And obviously now the next thing we'll talk about is Loeb Stadium and getting it put back together, putting a new stadium on its footprint. and we've got the Colt World Series that's been going on just after the end of the Aviator season. Once that's done, how quickly does reconstruction, I guess starting maybe even with demolition, get going at what will be the new, whatever we're going to call it, Loeb Stadium?
Well, you know, the stadium itself, construction-wise, probably won't start till sometime in 2018. You know, we still have a lot of steps that we need to do, but those steps will begin once the seasons are over. We've put together a steering committee that's beginning to work on the stadium, and we are ready to announce that we're going to have our first set of public meetings. We want to make sure that the public has plenty of input into what they think the stadium should be, how it should look, different amenities. We want to make sure, you know, we've looked at the Kokomo Stadium, and it's a great starting point for us, and we think we can have some economies that way. But we also want to hear from the community. We want to hear what they want, what's important to them. And so we're going to have a first set of meetings. The first one's going to be on August the 30th, and the second one's going to be on September the 13th. They're going to be out at Jeff High School. That's kind of right in the middle of the city. And we've got a big room out there, so if there's a great turnout, we've got plenty of room, and we've got a lot of parking and a lot of technology in there for showing slides and different ideas. So those two public meetings will be coming up, like I said, August the 30th and September the 13th will be the first two public meetings. There's also going to be a way as we move forward to make comments online, and so we hope to get all that public input this year, take all of that along with the Kokomo design, and then in 17, really begin to hone into design, do the survey work, really make sure what everybody wants and what we can do will fit and will be just the way that we want it, and then time the construction to probably start in 18 and then finish in 19, because we're going to have to do that in phases. We're going to have to build the field and the stadium in a way that we can get enough of it done that when the seasons roll back around, they can play, won't be finished, and then as soon as they're done, we'll take the rest of that time to actually finish it, and so the next year it would be fully open. So my goal that everything would be done for that baseball season of 2019.
Is there any worry about the Aviators themselves? Because I think longtime residents will remember that the Lafayette Leopards were here in the 90s, and they were only here 4 to 6 years, something like that, before the team went away. Any worry about making sure you keep the long-term summer tenant of the stadium so that you've got someone to use this thing for 30 to 40 games a year?
Well, I mean, nothing in life is guaranteed, right? So, but we do believe with a growing community, and when you look at Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe County, when you look, we're one of the fastest growing counties in Indiana. We're creating jobs. We have a wonderful business environment. We're focused on quality of life issues with things that we're doing with our parks and recreation, our downtown streetscape. All of those things, we think we are a great market. You know, we hope it's the Aviators. We really enjoy working with MKE Sports. But we think we're a great market, whether it's a baseball team and a soccer team, different uses for that stadium, Lafayette Jeff, the Colt World Series, Legion Ball, with the artificial turf, being able to do some different tournaments for different age groups. You know, what you have to do is you have to sell your whole community, the economic development side, the quality of life side. You bring all those together, and that's how you ensure that you make things like that still happen.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. Thanks, as always, for your time. We'll do it again next month.
Thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Tune in next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and you can email questions in advance of that conversation to ask@WBAA.org. You can also find all of these shows archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.